Today is August 5th, 2015, and this is episode number 318 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man who has promised to deliver startling insights in just a few days. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on our question, anything about the show, we would like you to write us at ACM@macobserver.com.
Startling, you say?
Well, that's what I'm told. I'm speaking at CatMac in Austin.
So,
according to their write-up, I'm going to be delivering startling insights.
That's amazing. So you're going to stand up in front of these people and say, the Earth is balanced on the back of a giant space turtle.
Or something else startling.
That would be
startling insights. I hope I can deliver on some startling insights.
Well, I guess standing in front of people and going "boo" would be kind of startling.
Yeah, not very insightful.
Well, baby steps, Brian. You'll get there.
Startling insights. All right. Well, let's see here. What's the show about? Apple? Is this the Apple one?
This is the Apple one. The one where we do the context, and then we make fun of the interns.
Oh, right,
the interns. And then we say things like top men and the sausage being made.
Okay, and that's this week's Apple Context.
Do you have anything to add?
Well, that's our show in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, good Lord.
Well, I guess if nothing else, we know that we pay attention to what we're doing. So there's that.
Yes. Yes. Vaguely. We sort of pay attention.
I'm sorry, what?
We're phoning this in, man. We always phone it in.
Well, it's a lot easier when you phone it in.
Literally, one time I actually literally phoned it in from the road.
Yes, you did.
We've talked about that before, but that was definitely phoning it in. Anyway, we have some topics here. Let's start with MVNOs.
Right. Okay. So you were covering this stuff, and so it was what, earlier this week the news came, or a report came out that Apple was apparently working on or testing their own MVNO system, which is Mobile Virtual Network Operator. Did I get that right?
You did, although it has become synonymous with the service that an actual MVNO would offer.
What's that service, Brian?
Well, a mobile virtual cellular network.
Oh, a cellular network. Yes,
it's become synonymous with the service itself as opposed to a descriptor of the company offering the service.
Sort of like saying it's an ATM machine.
Or that I'm mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
Right. So, TrackPhone, Cricket, Straight Talk.
Virgin.
There's lots of these companies. And what they do is they buy bandwidth from the four major carriers who actually have the bandwidth. And they package it up under their own brand and basically handle all the billing and theoretical support.
Right. So then you could be using AT&T's network for your cell phone, but you would never actually deal with AT&T. You'd be dealing with this other company.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And it's a thin margin business for these companies, but what they get out of it is the ability, because they're buying in bulk from the carriers that actually have the bandwidth. And they don't have to invest in all the towers. They're not investing in the infrastructure. They're not actually making their own network. And so they can do business, but they don't have as many risks. And what the carriers that are selling the bandwidth get out of it is the ability to, they can build excess capacity for themselves without worrying how to pay for it, because it's being paid for, some of it's being paid for by the MVNOs.
Right. So, yeah, so that's a clever way to get someone else to pay for building out those networks.
Right. And they obviously make less money than they would selling it to directly to consumers like you and me, but at the same time they've got one account they're dealing with instead of, say, a million.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, it comes with their own, they get to cut some costs too.
And then for end users, they have alternatives to the big players, which means potentially better customer service, or at least
seldom.
Yeah.
The better prices, usually. It's usually an issue of price.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's about
price. You go to TrackPhone because pricing credit. So you go to TrackPhone. A lot of people go to TrackPhone, for instance, just to pull one out, or Cricut, because they can get a cheap device for little or nothing down and pay a relatively small amount, and they're likely not going to be locked into a 2-year contract. So a lot of pay-as-you-go stuff, too.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So it gives consumers more options.
It does. It absolutely gives consumers more options. And everything we just described doesn't really fit anything that Apple does. Cheap, not doing it themselves. That's not really Apple's thing. But I do still think there was fire behind Business Insider smoke. I think that, so Apple, what Apple said, like, the next day, they gave a statement to CNBC. I guess we could be smart and actually read it, because we're professionals.
That's crazy talk.
Their tweet was, Apple says it is not discussed and is not planning it MVNO service, cellular service, following reports saying it was planning on doing that. And then the actual statement that Apple gave CNBC was, quote, we have not discussed, nor do we have any plans to launch an MVNO.
Okay, that doesn't rule out the possibility of testing MVNO services themselves.
Right, because what Business Insider was saying is that they were in, that Apple was in talks with carriers in Europe for a European version of this MVNO. And there's always, you know, it doesn't matter what you say, it doesn't matter how honest or direct or completely transparent your statement is. When it's a company like Apple, there's always wiggle room to read into stuff.
Sure.
And I'll even approach it from a slightly different angle. I would be flabbergasted if Apple hadn't been testing something like this. I mean, of course Apple's testing. Apple tests lots of things. Why wouldn't Apple test its own MVNO? Why wouldn't Apple check out what the logistics would be on offering their own cellular service so that they can capture more of the customer experience?
Sure.
Apple has looked into that.
Yeah. And it may be that they've looked into it and have found that it's not worth the investment they'd have to put into it.
Or that they can't differentiate an Apple branded MVNO enough from the other carriers, or that it would carry too many political strings with maybe the carrier said, we're not selling you anything, and if you do this, we're not going to sell the iPhone, which that didn't happen, but you know.
Right, but that would be a really good reason for Apple to not get into that market, because they need to have the other carriers selling their phones.
Or what I think is the most likely thing is what I believe, you know, do you remember Project Fi from Google?
Yeah, that was their MVNO.
Right. Which, by the way, I still think it's a terrible name because I think fee-fi-fo-fum rather than Wi-Fi, but that's just, you know, me.
No, I'm with you. That's the first thing I think of as well.
And that to me is not imagery you want associated with yourself.
No. And then for me, because my brain's weird, the next place I go is ho 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 green giant.
Yeah, you're weird.
I know.
But that's okay. We love you.
Thank you.
Project Fi. That is a Google branded MVNO that is extraordinarily limited, very limited markets, and it is limited specifically to the Nexus 6.
See, that's the difference between Apple and Google when it comes to testing out new things, just like on a cursory level. Google sets it up as a public thing, and they just do an extremely limited user base.
And slap beta up on it.
Yeah, and slap beta on it. Apple does it quietly and discreetly.
I don't know. Apple Maps was essentially a beta. We've had more betas from Apple.
Okay, in many cases. How's that?
As Apple has grown and their services have grown, right? Apple has had to do more publicly accessible betas for things. But that we're looking for Fiverr and Thumper and Bigwig and Hazel. Although Thumper, I'm sort of mixing worlds here. But
boy, howdy.
Yeah, Thumper. Fiverr. Okay, so.
Wait, who's on allergy meds this week?
Dude, this week has been. I'm driving. I'm on a 3-day road trip that begins a 3-week trip, and on Friday, and like I've had more social engagements this week than I've had in the last 6 months.
You're like our social butterfly.
Yeah, this week I am. It's yeah. Anywho. Apple, MVNO, testing. So Project Fi, one of the things that Project Fi does is switch between networks automatically. Right? So it's transparent to the user. Project Fi is, and I think it'll actually switch off to Wi-Fi when it can too. Okay. And the... what's that?
Actually, that's where something like an Apple or Google MVNO becomes intriguing to me. Because otherwise, it feels like I'm just trading off who I'm sending my money to, but I'm not getting better coverage. A service where it can jump networks, so I'm always on the strongest signal, that's compelling.
I completely agree. And the reason why I brought up Project Fi and described that is because... what if the thing that Apple has found is that the technology is not quite there to be able to offer the kind of experience that they want to in that regard?
It wouldn't surprise me if that's exactly what happened. I mean, if I'm on a call that's using AT&T's network and the signal is going to drop, but Verizon has a strong signal, I want the call to seamlessly switch between those carriers through my MVNO. I don't lose my call. My guess is they can't make that happen reliably.
Well, but there is, if they're truly not doing it yet, that's my guess too.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. We've solved that problem.
I think that would be a particular holdup. But there is one more. There's lots more that Apple can bring to this, and that is convenience, ease of billing, customer interfacing, the fact that you could go to Genius Bar to get help with your carrier services. There's a lot of stuff on the service and payment side of the wireless network that Apple could improve.
Yeah, but if they're not going to give better coverage, that's a problem. Because I think most people, I think the average user, how about that? The average user, they don't think of, say, their Virgin phone as a phone that's on Verizon's network. They think of it as Virgin's network. So if they have a crappy connection, they see it as a Virgin issue. I don't think that's a problem Apple wants.
Probably not. And the Apple SIM can do just this, switch between networks. It's designed to switch between networks because you have made the choice to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But if Apple can take that same technology and leverage it to do the automatic switching, that's the thing. But I guess to close up this loop, if Apple isn't doing an MVO, I imagine it's because the technology isn't there to do what they want to be able to differentiate themselves enough.
I think I'm with you. Meaning, I agree with you.
All right, sweet. Yeah. Rock and roll.
Yeah.
Done.
All right, well, I'm glad we...
solved that problem.
Man, we should go have a drink now.
I don't know. I think we should probably actually finish the show.
Oh, right, the show. Okay, well... yeah, as long as we're here. Sure, let's do that.
Okay, good. All right, rock on. Let's see, what's our next topic?
I think there's more about the whole crypto wars that's going on.
Oh, yeah, right. Apple is like... Yeah, it's interesting to me. So, it's interesting to me because the last major round of the crypto wars was fought in the 90s. And it was aimed at hardware manufacturers. It was aimed at, you know, Intel chip makers.
So what do you mean by crypto wars?
Well, the crypto wars is the name that's been given to the government's desire to have backdoors into everything.
Right. And in the 90s, it was the Clipper chip.
It was the Clipper chip in phones, but it was also dealing with export controls over PCs because Apple didn't want U.S. companies exporting computers that were powerful enough to do real encryption, which is just stupid and idiotic.
Yeah.
And everybody told them that. Like, I mean, the, you know, industry and a lot of military people told the Clinton administration that they were wrong. And this didn't start with the Clinton administration, but this Clinton administration was front and center during a lot of this. And, you know, the people who actually know always say, no, you're wrong. We need encryption and you can't stop it. And because you can't stop it, you shouldn't artificially impede U.S. technology companies, because all you're going to do is stymie our growth, foster development in other countries, and seed the U.S. The U.S.'s domination in the technology field.
And yet the government was all, no, 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 you can't sell those.
No, yeah, the world's going to end, and, you know, if we can't get Clipper chips and everything, and what the Clipper chip did, it was an actual chip, and it was designed to be embedded in cell phones, so that not only could all cell phones be tracked, which actually they can still be tracked, but with different chips. But the government would be able to, the NSA or other law enforcement entities would be able to easily tap into communications on that device.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Right, and that was the Clipper chip was a thing for like 18 months, and then it was defeated is probably not the right word, but it was
shot down.
Abandoned.
Scuttled.
Scuttled. There we go. Those are good words. I like those words. And then on the PC side again, it was all about computers that were strong and fast enough to do real encryption. And again, the US was very concerned about their ability to get data should they capture a computer, or should they encryption over the internet wasn't really much of a thing yet, because the internet was slow and computers were slow.
Right.
But they were thinking about that. And, I mean, and the people whose job it is to protect this country and protect its, infrastructure and assets and, you know, power generating, the network, the network of power generators, and to protect industry and to protect the our own military's computer infrastructure, the people whose job it is to even just find and stop criminal and terrorist related activities, to keep foreign governments from stealing our stuff, the people whose job it is to do all those things believe that it's much easier to do it if they can see everything and get anything.
Well, I'm sure to some degree it would be easier if they could just get anything they wanted anytime they wanted.
To all of the degrees it is. There's no doubt about that. If the NSA had all of the things, the NSA would be able to stop most of the things, or at least alert those who would do the stopping.
And well, and see, I disagree. I think that there would be so much data that they wouldn't be able to find what it is that they yeah, need to be able to stop things.
Maybe they probably figured out though. They figure out they'd figure out a way to weed out the the garbage. But yeah. But that doesn't matter. First of all, they can't have everything because the reality is that if, let's say, Apple and Google are forced to build in backdoors. Let's just make that an argument here.
Okay.
And so now when the government delivers a warrant, Apple can turn around and use that backdoor and decrypt iMessages between one target and another target, hand that information over to the government, and the bad guys are stopped. Okay.
Well, on the surface, that doesn't sound so bad because now the bad guy's caught.
Right. Yay, everything's wonderful. But the cascading effect is this. First of all, if Apple has the keys to the back door, the bad guys will find the keys.
Yes.
Right.
And that's a huge problem.
That's a universally accepted truth in the world of people who actually know how this stuff works. And secondly, were the government to force Apple to build in those backdoors, and Google, and Facebook, which owns WhatApp, you know, and any other particular maker of a particular communications platform or operating system, say Microsoft, if the government were to force them to build in those backdoors, the bad guys would, criminal organizations, at the very least, would develop their own secure and encrypted communications platforms.
Which then gives us a double problem. They now have potential access to the backdoor the government put into all of our stuff, but they've created their own secure system outside of that as well.
Right, and there would be a huge... Listen, if you're outside the U.S., you don't want the NSA listening to your stuff, and we don't want the NSA listening to our stuff, and we're citizens of this country.
Right.
Right? If you're elsewhere, you don't want the U.S. snooping through your stuff. So what not only would criminal organizations and or terrorists develop their own secure and encrypted platforms, or at the very least communication systems, there would be a lot of incentive for competitors to Android and iOS and Windows Phone to enter the market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not even touching things like the fact that if the U.S. has, can force this back door, that means that the Chinese can force Apple to do the same thing. You know, the Russians can force Apple to do the same thing. You know, let alone them hacking their way to those keys, they can force Apple to give them the same access that the U.S. has if they want to do business in those countries.
Which I assume is exactly what would happen.
Of course they would. Why wouldn't they?
Sure. And
the precedent has been set.
Right. And since it would be, in this case, a software-based thing, it's just a matter of most likely flipping a bit so that the next country has access to all the data. And pretty soon, there's no way to say that you have personal data that is secure in any way.
Unless you're
the bad guys.
Working outside the law. Now, normal people could work outside the law too, and quite frankly, that would happen. You know, the rise of black market, you know, secure communications platforms would occur. They would rise.
Oh, of course.
Lots of people would want this, and lots of people who aren't criminals, just out of principle, don't want everybody and the brothers snooping through their conversations. So, I mean, you know, anyway, I know we've talked about this before in the show, and none of that's changed. These are the same old arguments. And the thing is that we had all these arguments in the 90s and the government lost, and the government should have lost. Encryption protects us from the bad guys, even while it also prevents the good guys, the theoretical good guys, from accessing our stuff when they have the a warrant and the right to it.
Well, data protection, you can't expect it to be a mutually exclusive thing where it's protected on one side or from one group but not from another. It's a binary thing. It's protected or it's not. And it doesn't matter if it's hardware based or if it's software based. If you have created a backdoor, it's no longer effectively protected from anyone.
Right. From anyone. And yet, despite the fact that we've already gone through this, despite the numerous white papers and all kinds of technical papers and philosophical papers that have been written and published and filed just added to this topic, we've got the government doing it again. The Obama administration, through the DOJ and the FBI and the various intelligence services, they all say that they're going dark, meaning that they're losing access to all this information. And you know what? I don't care. They're going to have to do their job in a different way.
I would rather have the privacy than the theater of security.
Yes. I would. Don't get me wrong. As much as I can from the outside, I understand why they're freaking out. But I think that we had an over-reliance on mass surveillance in the first place. I mean, not only is it offensive and morally wrong and the opposite of living in a free society, it, I think, has made our intelligence folks, I don't want to say lazy. Let's see, lazy. Like, what have I done? I'm sitting here at my desk.
Well,
and these guys are out there protecting us. I don't mean to criticize them, but I know that like one of the problems that the Bush administration had is that they had cut down on physical assets, people in around the world, as they relied more and more and more on surveillance, electronic surveillance in particular, to gather information. And this ended up being a problem when we went to war in Iraq and when we went to war in Afghanistan, because we didn't have, and as the fight with Al-Qaeda broadened, we didn't have the physical assets because they just been, they've been pulling back from that stuff. I mean, there's no substitution for that sort of thing from the material that I read on the topic. I'm not going to claim to be an expert.
No, it's okay. You can claim to be an expert. It's our show. But I think you're right. Relying so heavily on automated and remote surveillance systems has left us and any other country that's doing the same in a weak position, because a lot of the data that can be gathered by actual people in an area, I mean, it's amazing the difference that a human can make.
Right, which is not to say that mass surveillance or electronic surveillance in a more finite capacity doesn't have its value to these groups whose job it is to protect us.
Sure, but it should be...
They absolutely do.
It should be a component in an overall surveillance system and data gathering system as opposed to the foundation.
Yeah, that's my gut feeling on it. And this is very much at the heart of our thoughts on this is the reality that you can't stop encryption. Even if encryption can be stopped, it can't be stopped. The bad guys are going to find access to encryption, meaning that the only folks who don't have encryption are the good guys, are the normal guys, the folks like us.
And that's a problem.
That is a problem. And, yeah, it's cutting off your nose to spite your face and then bragging about how pretty you are.
And yeah, and then the rhetoric that's going along with this latest wave, like saying if companies don't give the government, our government, a backdoor into applications for data collection, then that's supporting terrorist activities.
Right. There was that was one of the things that sparked our recent coverage of this, is that I think it's a lawfare.org. It is a blog that follows intelligence, the intelligence world, and you know, folks on the privacy side consider it a shill for government interest. I don't know that that's true. It just could be someone who truly believes that the surveillance state's a good thing. That sane people can believe that the surveillance that trading all of our freedoms for security is a good choice. I disagree with that.
I disagree with that vehemently.
But a sane person can have that idea. And this person who I mean, it'd be like calling the Mac Observer shills for Apple. Apple has nothing to do with what we publish. And Apple doesn't really work with us.
No.
You know, our content doesn't come from Apple, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
But they don't get to approve anything that we write.
Yeah. Right. They don't give us money. They're not sponsors.
But when they don't like something we do, they'll let us know.
That's true. But they still have no control over it. We're not Apple shills. We just happen to be fans of what Apple does. And I don't know specifically who the folks. I don't know much about the Lawfare folks, but a lot of people consider them shills. You know, take that with a grain of salt. And they published a piece arguing that by not building in a backdoor to the encryption services on iOS devices, and so that they can respond to a lawfully obtained warrant, that they could be found guilty of one provision or another of an anti-terrorism law, of aiding and abetting and supporting. Aiding and providing material support for a terrorist. That was their premise.
Which I think is pretty hyperbolic.
It is. And it's actually, quite frankly, it's disgusting in my opinion. It's fear mongering. It's just a disgusting argument that ignores reality.
Well, I think it's an argument that's in line with things that the FBI has said for, you know, when they went to have direct access to all of our information and data, which is the think about the children argument. We have to protect the children.
It is. It very much feels like something that was floated to, you know, intelligence industry wanted floated out there, but they wanted it to come from someone else. Again, that's why privacy folks consider them a shill. We don't know. We don't know enough about them.
No, we don't. But we do know that we don't agree with their argument.
Yes.
Yeah. So, keep our data private, like it should be, from everyone.
Yes. Yes. From everyone, because it's privacy from everyone or no one.
Yeah, there you go. It's a very binary thing.
It truly is.
On many levels, now that I think about it.
Mm-hmm. Now, we say that... Apple doesn't give us money, but we do have an affiliate program.
I totally knew that was going to be your segue. I totally knew it.
Well, yeah, we got to say it. If you go to macobserver.com/Apple Store, Apple does have an affiliate program. So when we steer people to buy stuff from the online Apple Store, Apple will give us a percentage, just like Amazon and MacMall and several other major retailers. Mm-hmm. And you can help support us by going to MacObserver.com/Apple Store, click on the Apple Store link and doing your shopping that way. Doesn't cost you anything?
No, it doesn't. Just whatever you're going to pay anyhow, that's what you still pay. Mm-hmm. But we get a little incentive payment from Apple for directing you their way.
Yep.
And that's awesome because that helps us keep the website running, pay our writers, make sure the podcasts stay online, all of that.
Yeah, affiliate stuff. Revenues are very important to any modern publication. And we would very much appreciate your support by, I mean, it's just so easy. MacObserver.com/Apple Store. And click on the link to the Apple Store.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
The bottom line is you're going to be a consumer anyhow. We might as well get a little something out of it too.
Mm-hmm. It's true. It's absolutely true. How about that hoverboard?
Oh my God. I want this so bad, and I can't even ride a skateboard.
Yeah, I'm too old and fat for skateboards.
Yeah, but this skateboard is so cool. This is the skateboard that we talked about a few months ago. Is that right?
Probably not more than two. It's from Lexus.
Yeah, so it's a true hoverboard, like from Back to the Future.
Well, sort of. The concept is similar to the hoverboard in Back to the Future, but of course it's not as capable as the fictitious hoverboard in Back to the Future.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. Mostly pedantic.
Yes. Mostly.
So anyhow, it's a hoverboard.
It's a hoverboard.
And it's real.
And a couple of months ago, Lexus put out a teaser video for this thing and didn't actually see anybody riding it. I think you see someone put their foot on it towards the end, and then it fades to black. Lexus has since released a video of the thing in action, and as well as a how-to video.
Yeah, they spent
not a how-to,
behind the scenes.
Thank you, behind the scenes.
Yeah, and it's cool. This behind the scenes video documents their more than a year long process of going from the concept of a hoverboard to actually testing it in a specially designed skate park in Barcelona.
Right. You know, and I was all excited about this, and a lot of our readers went, you know, hate to break it to you, this is CGI.
So really, the reason we're talking about this right now is to give you some vindication, isn't it?
Exactly. Vindication and validation both. No, but seriously, the video is amazingly cool. So what they're doing is it's exactly as we surmised at the time. It's a superconductive, super-cooled magnetic levitation.
Mm-hmm.
And the hoverboard itself has got, I think it's liquid, is it liquid nitrogen or liquid helium?
Liquid nitrogen.
Liquid nitrogen cooling in it, which is why it steams. If you watch the video, you'll see steam coming out of it. That's not like some hokey effect. That's actually a product of the liquid nitrogen cooling that's going on. And that creates a superconductor that is then able to react to the metal, the steel, I'm assuming. I don't know if it's steel, but the metal that underlies the concrete of this skateboard park that Lexus had built for this project. And that results in levitation.
It's very cool. And watching someone ride a skateboard down a ramp and then across a pool of water.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Now, it's probably not deep water.
It doesn't matter though. It's so cool.
It seems like it's probably only a couple of inches deep, but it doesn't matter. And it is cool because it's cool and you're seeing a dude riding a skateboard over water, and you see a lot of false starts. You actually kind of sort of watch him going through the process of learning how to ride this thing, because it doesn't ride like a normal skateboard, because there's no friction, there's no wheels, there's no contact with the ground.
Right. Yeah. And watching one of the guys try and stand on the skateboard, and then he just goes right over on his butt.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon they realize, oh, we have to put one foot on, start it moving, and then put our other foot on. And yeah, it was fascinating watching these people not only design the skateboard, but figure out how to actually ride it.
Yeah. 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 And then in the behind the scenes video, you see a lot of track based stuff where they're testing, you know, various primitive and somewhat less primitive prototypes that are just riding above a rail of metal.
Right. And yeah, and then you see where they've made a cart that two people can sit in, and they've run that around on the rails. And it's, yeah, it's really fascinating to watch the development process as they get to a true hoverboard.
Yeah. And it's just, man, it's just so, it's so cool. I mean, this thing, you know, it's big and it's bulky. It's larger than your standard skateboard, and it's really thick, and I, you know, you can watch by this guy trying to figure out how to ride this thing. There's a heck of a learning curve, and he's a professional skateboarder. Mm-hmm. There's just clearly a learning curve because it's so different, and but it's so cool. It's so interesting. My favorites from the video is when, not so much when he's crossing the water, but when he crosses the water and keeps going.
Yes.
Something about that. It's kind of hard to explain. You got to see it.
It's just a really cool shot.
And we're going to have a link to the Cool Stuff Found video. The video is going to be posted on our, before you hear this, the video will be posted on the Mac Observer.
Right. Luckily, our timeline is wibbly and wobbly.
Yes. And then there's watching him ride. He's going along a wall.
Mm-hmm.
And just like thinking, like, I don't even know. It's either centripetal or centrifugal. I always get the two mixed up. A force that allows a skateboarder on a normal skateboard to, with enough speed, to ride sideways on a wall.
Yeah, you can do the same thing with a car going fast enough.
Right, right, exactly. And but you know, there's no friction here. It's really interesting seeing him do that. The whole project is fun. I hope Lexus gets a lot of mileage out of this because they deserve it.
They do. And now I'm curious how they plan on using this technology, because my assumption is they didn't drop all this money in just to see if they could make a hoverboard. This is a concept for something else, something bigger.
Yeah, it could be.
Unless they're going to open up hoverboard theme parks.
Which they probably won't, that's for sure. I can't imagine I can't imagine the money involved in just the hoverboard itself, let alone the park, building a park with a metal underneath it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they built the skate park from scratch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's really cool.
It is cool. Now we got some email from Alistair William M. Norwood, who is shockingly English.
Wow.
Alistair William M. Norwood.
So his bits came from a really long way away.
Probably. Yeah, yes. Yes, they did. And the NSA may or may not have been able to read them as they went. But he says, I bought my Apple Watch Sport on the first day of shop release in Sheffield, England. I bought the last they had. I went in for a stainless steel one, but they had none left. You can tell it was last due to its green strap. I guess he was saying that wasn't a very popular strap. They seem very popular in that store. I very much enjoy my watch, however. It seems like a problem looking for a solution. It does draw attention at work, however. Most people seem to be waiting for the second generation. Your landing page for Amazon, will it support? No, actually, it currently does not support Amazon.co.uk.
Oh, well, that's a good point.
He says he enjoys the show and that he wishes we would talk more about the iPad. Maybe we can do that next week.
Sure.
So anyway, a report from England says that there weren't many left, but that they did seem popular. More anecdotal reporting. We do still want to hear about your experiences in your Apple store relating to the Apple Watch. Are people paying any attention to them? You know, how busy are the Apple Watch stands compared to the rest of the store?
Yeah, it's very interesting what different people are observing. Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. All right. Well, we have a relatively short show today.
Well, we didn't use words that are as long as we often do.
And that was because I'm prepping for this trip.
Right. And we need to get you out of the studio so that you can get a bunch of stuff done.
Yeah, I gotta fly back to Silicon Valley so I can pack to leave.
Right. Right. And just so you know, the interns, they did the pre-flight check on the plane.
Oh, good Lord.
And the text that I got from Sebulba said that it's Marvy Sweet. So I don't even know what that means, but I'm
his name is Sierra.
Right. Yeah. What I said.
You said Sebulba.
Yeah.
Right. Nonetheless, I'm going to now I'm going to have to make different arrangements because I don't want Ainsley or Sierra doing the pre-flight check on the plane that I'm going to fly back to Silicon Valley so that I can drive somewhere else.
Want me to have Ainsworth make some calls for you?
No, I do not.
Okay.
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm talking about both of you. And not, don't give me that look. Those two, they are so needy.
They are. They're kind of clingy too. Do you have the thing where they won't stop hugging you?
Well, no, that doesn't bother me so much as just like their belief that their feelings shouldn't be hurt.
Oh yeah. They must hug you differently than the way they hug me.
You are not a precious snowflake.
No, I'm a precious snowflake.
No, you are not either.
Oh.
You are not either, but at least you're not a millennial intern. So, you know, rock and roll. And to all millennial interns out there, we absolutely love you. No, not you two. But
all the rest.
All the rest of them, yeah.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
You can know that our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, and our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is recorded by Boom, just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
Hey, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.